Oh, man. What a callback.
What a callback.
No, right. That was from Ted Lasso, Ethan. Sorry. You're like, what are they talking about?
You should watch Ted Lasso, by the way.
You should.
Apple Premium, Apple Plus. I actually don't even know what the service is called.
I think it's Apple Plus. I think it's called A Bushel of Apples. That'd be a great bushel. That'd be a great streaming.
Bushel would be a better name.
Yeah. That's what they should call it.
We should scribe a letter and send it by horse.
That way, when it doesn't happen, we can be like, it's probably just not there yet.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin, and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, the other host.
You're getting just... We need to rein it in.
Reel it in. Don't try and distract me with horse terms, Ben.
You do love horses.
Dude, it's one of these things. The last time I went to Kentucky to visit my brother-in-law, we were just in horse country, and it really dawned on me. Because the thing is, I'm never around horses. Like, when are you around horses? Just never. And you don't really think about it.
Almost never. This past weekend, yeah. I was down in the Outer Banks because my sister-in-law and best friend are getting married next year in the Outer Banks. And we were checking out the venue. Like, we needed to go so that we could like put eyes on the ground to like figure out like where everything's gonna be. Which
eyes on the ground. I'm sure you were on all fours, carpet level.
Dude, I didn't bring my magnifying glass for nothing.
He's like, this seems like a good wedding venue, but I need to know if anyone was murdered here.
Exactly. I was looking for clues. Unfortunately, I found none. Well, although I did find a single mushroom.
It sounds like, I think you mean, fortunately, you found none, right?
Well, depends on how interesting you want the story to be.
Unfortunately for how interesting the story is, fortunate for a wedding venue.
Yes, well phrased, okay. Very well phrased. Mm. Yeah, but so I was down there and found a mushroom, like I said. They assured me it'd be cleared up by next August.
Yeah.
Which... Let's just say it better be.
I'm going to go check. I'm going to bring the magnifying glass. And if there is one piece of fungi on this property, we will have words. There will be a review.
There will be a review. Actually, I might come back to that here in a minute because reviews are something I've totally started doing more lately.
Oh, really?
I think they're kind of great. But while I was down in the Outer Banks, and I did not know this about the Outer Banks, but there are wild horses.
Oh, is this where like Assateague Island is? Possibly.
I don't know. So, okay. Answer me this. When I was in third grade, we read a novel called Misty of Chincoteague.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that story?
Maybe that's what I was trying to think of.
There's like a very famous like annual like wild horse. I think it's like a migration of sorts where they like actually the horses like swim across like a channel. And it's like a big thing. They make like a whole event out of it. That is actually not, it's in the same general area, speaking of Earth, but it's like 3 hours north of the Outer Banks. The Outer Banks just happens to have wild horses, which you should not feed or get close to. It's a very big rule. They have signs everywhere. Do not feed the horses.
Do not do it.
While I was down there, I did get to drive my Jeep on the beach, and I was hoping that I was going to see one of these wild horses.
Yeah.
But I didn't see any.
Okay. So I think these are the same place. The Assateague Islands and Chincoteague, I think, are the same.
Confirmed.
I think.
Okay. Someone will let us know.
It seems like
we're wrong.
It's in Maryland, though, not North Carolina. So we are off base.
The takeaway here is that there are, in my mind, I imagine wild horses to be like in the wide open plains of the Midwest or something.
It's so much more fun to think that they live on beaches.
They're just like beaching it, you know?
Right, yeah.
Living that hashtag beach life.
Right.
Taking in some Jimmy Buffett tunes. You know, like,
oh man, that's a fun idea,
right?
Yes,
horses love Jimmy Buffett.
Horses love Jimmy Buffett.
New
for
head
sure.
Cannon. New head cannon.
There it is.
Okay, Jay, corny joke. Okay. This was submitted from Redditor, Mr. Potato 7900, and I thought it was just so good, I had to go with it.
Okay.
Okay. Why does the Norwegian Navy put barcodes on their ships?
Why do they put barcodes on their ships? I don't know. Why does the Norwegian Navy put barcodes on their ships?
So when they get back to port, they can Scandinavian.
That's a pretty good one.
You get it?
I get it.
They can scan the Navy.
Oh, man. Scan, because that's what they're called.
How was someone able to make a pun out of Scandinavian?
I think they must have just heard the phrase Scandinavian, and they're like, oh, okay, what parameters do I have to set up for that to be the pun?
So joke construction 101, start with the punchline, build back from that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because this is like one of those things where it's like... There, you would never come to the question on your own, like, why was the Norwegian Navy put barcodes on their ships? Because is it even true? Who cares?
Right, not the point.
It's a hilarious anecdote.
Right. You just want that Scandinavian punchline.
Yeah. I can't get over it. It's so good. Also, now a new segment on the pop that will last
segment?
As long as I can remember to do it.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a very long time, but we'll see, maybe.
We'll see. And now, a fact about coyotes.
Oh, because you love coyotes.
Because I love coyotes, and coyotes find me.
They find you. They seek
do.
You out.
They seek me out. Yes, indeed. Actually, it was, you know what? I saw a coyote in the middle of the trail a couple weeks ago when we were mountain biking. The week following, this is all coming together so nicely, we ran into a couple of gentlemen on horses.
Yeah, we
True
did.
True fact.
Well,
True,
there's if
on
you're
our trails.
Out, if you're out on the mountain bike trails where we've been mountain biking... here recently, you're almost guaranteed to see people on horses.
Yeah, it's a big thing.
Yeah, big horseback trail
right,
as well.
Right. And so we were all talking about the various kinds of wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
One guy was saying he saw a bear move an entire log with just one paw.
Wow.
And it was like, wow, man, they're so strong.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I saw a coyote last week. And he was like, a coyote? I've never seen a coyote out here. And I was like, well, I have. I saw it last week.
He's like, I don't know. If I haven't seen it, it doesn't exist, boy.
Well, it was really funny because I basically have seen, and this is the thing about it, I've never really done that much research into coyotes, to be completely frank. Franklin with you, I've always assumed I knew what a coyote looked like, just sort of on the whole,
a smaller wolf.
Kind of like a small wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, all of a sudden this guy's like, no, you didn't, like, I don't know, I've never seen a coyote out here. There's no way you've seen a coyote. And so it was like, well, I think I did. So I looked up coyotes. I 100% saw one.
Yeah. You were like, so you were doubting yourself. I saw some other kind of wild dog.
This is the level of confidence that I carry with me at all times, is I can have seen something with my own two eyes. Someone who wasn't there can tell me that it's unlikely and it will make me doubt whether or not it actually happened.
This is why, the eyewitness accounts as testimony in court, just so unreliable.
It seems like it would be
very bad.
Yeah. Because I think if I talked to someone long enough and they showed me enough examples of like wild dogs or talked about just my own propensity to manifest coyotes in obscure locations,
right,
it would be like, maybe this is just something that's happening to me.
Right.
My friend of the coyotes. Anyway, fun fact about coyotes. Did you know they can run nearly 40 miles per hour?
I did not know that.
I found this to be very, very fast.
That is really fast. It's certainly faster than I could go on a mountain bike in the middle of a trail.
Oh yeah, we would stand no chance whatsoever.
We would.
Yeah.
However, I don't think coyotes are the hunting type as much as they are the scavenging type, I believe, is
right.
Sort of their MO.
So the real key
also,
here...
Also, we look like a giant metal creature that'd be way bigger than them, so I don't think they want to pick a fight with us.
Good point. I'm not feeling any danger, and I'm one with the coyotes anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, what are they going to do? Come, like, give you a kiss? Probably.
Maybe.
Yeah, that'd be scary AF. By the way,
sorry to use
harsh letters, but
I know I was going to say, man, this is a family friendly pop.
Ethan, if you want to bleep those letters, I understand.
Oh man, we should talk to Ethan, the editor, more in real time.
Oh yeah, during the pop.
Yeah. Just so that everybody knows, like, exactly how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
Which I actually, interestingly, I had someone. I wish I had the email in front of me right now, but they are a student at culinary school, and they were like, "Just so you know, I made sausage recently, and it's not as disgusting as you think it is." And they gave me the entire process of how to make sausage.
Wow.
And I was like, that was useful.
I think probably if done properly, it's not very disgusting, but I think there is a historical notion that people would just sort of fill the sausages with just, you know, the leftover table scraps and then serve it up. And that's sort of the disgust. That's why the phrase means what it does.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you for reminding me that now. Because now whenever I eat sausages, which is basically constantly, you know, I'm going to be like, I'm going to be thinking about what Jay said.
Well, for reference, whenever I imagine the phrase how the sausage is made, it makes me think of the song from Les Mis, Keeper of the Inn, I think. Master of the Inn. That's it. Master of the House. I got there.
Wow. Ooh. Look at you go.
Master of the House. Yeah, because he fills up the sausages with pieces of this and that. And that's what it always makes me think of.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what you took away from Les Mis.
Mostly. French Revolution, Eddie Redmayne, whatever. Mostly Sacha Baron Cohen and Helen Helena Bonham Carter make disgusting sausages.
And now
Yeah, and then, yeah, upcharge them to the guests.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah, they're not nice people, no. Oh. Yeah, very bad characters in the show.
I'm not a big fan of people who aren't nice people.
Me neither.
It's like, I feel like, okay, so have we talked about this on The Pop? I don't know if we have. The show that you have turned me on to watching that I have loved.
Yeah.
Like, loved more than I can feel like I can properly express is this show called Ted Lasso.
Dude, Ted Lasso, it just finished its season one last Friday.
Last Friday I watched it.
As we're recording it. I watched it too. Man, it's a overwhelmingly positive experience.
It is. Yeah. It's like the entire show, and this is where I almost, my criticism of the show Ted Lasso is that the preview for it instills people from Apple, if you're listening, take note here, because the previews for the show are terrible in terms of setting you up for what the show is about.
Right.
It's almost like what they attempted to do was they put a fishing lure on that was... That they thought would catch your attention.
Right.
But then, like, when you went to bite the fishing lure, it was actually, like, a piece of candy for the fish.
Yeah.
You know?
Like oh, this was good for you, actually.
Like, yeah, yeah. Like, it's going to seem like I'm trying to catch you, but in reality, I'm going to give you something even more awesome, but you won't want the awesome thing. You'll want the fishing lure.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Is the analogy working?
It totally is. And I think what they did, because the star is Jason Sudeikis, who is an ex-SNL cast member.
Yes.
And most of his movies are predictable in terms of him being a total goofball and kind of going a little over the line in terms of like crudeness or raunchiness or like just a little further than what you'd expect, which is pretty typical of a lot of like SNL movies.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Yeah.
And so they have a bunch of like, they've edited together moments that make it look like the show is going to be pretty much like that. Like, oh, you know who this actor is, and you know the kind of comedy he has. Here are the briefest snippets of the closest we get to that kind of comedy in the show. Want to watch it? And then you watch it, and it's nothing like that.
Nothing like it at all.
Yeah.
Like, it would even lull you. So in case you don't know, the show Ted Lasso, as presented to you by the preview, is basically the story of an American football coach of like a Division II college team.
Right.
So like not like if you are even faintly aware of college football, you might know that like Alabama is like a dynasty team that always wins. They are in like the upper echelon, like the top league. This would be a coach of the league below that league.
Right.
And
it's who Alabama beats up on in week one.
In week one,
the
yeah.
Cupcake schools, as it were.
Although it sounds like he had won a trophy in that school.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so he's hired by a Premier League football club.
Yeah.
Yeah. To Americans soccer.
Yeah.
And the idea is that you basically have an American football coach coaching Premier League soccer.
Yeah, and he knows like, nothing about it.
Right. So like on the surface, your entire interpretation of what this show is going to be about is like the hilarious way in which this guy has no idea about how Premier League soccer works, which is true. But the show is not about soccer.
Not really, no.
It's like it's almost like the platform that they gave you. It's like
right.
here is the environment in which the actual story.
What would you say the show is about then?
Positivity.
Positivity. Like the power of positivity.
I think the power of positivity, but it's not like the power of positive thinking in like a like self-help type of book. It's just like genuine goodness.
It's just like like putting positivity in the world and seeing how it affects the world around you.
Exactly.
Kind of.
Exactly. But then I think that the show also, to its credit, does a very good job of showing that this is not a, like, it's maybe a kind of positivity that would go beyond what you might actually expect out of a human being.
Sure.
Like, slightly unrealistic. But I also do think that they give him plenty of human moments where you see him sad or frustrated or angry.
Right.
Like, he's not this, like, one-note person who the only thing he possesses is jolliness.
Right, right.
So I don't know. I think it gives you, like, a much more full picture of a person who maybe, if they embodied it just, like, a little bit more aggressively, embodied positivity a bit more aggressively.
Right.
But it makes me, I have no idea. Like, I feel like, what there's a term for it. Like, you know how they talk about a building can be toppled by like a jackhammer if it matches the, like the resonant frequency, I think is what it is.
Sure.
Of the whole building. So the idea is that like, if you have this big, tall structure, you can effectively turn it into a tuning fork if you can find its resonant frequency.
Okay.
Which would make like the whole building vibrate because you have like matched whatever that quality is.
This feels like a old wives' tale or something.
It may be a bit. Yeah. Like I'm sure that structural engineers are like, that's not actually a thing.
Yeah.
We use cross members and triangles to avoid that.
Right.
And 3D printed stainless steel materials.
Mm.
That's the future, I'm imagining.
That's the future. 3D printed stainless steel.
3D printed stainless steel. It's got to be a thing.
Right. Just put the robot down, come back a month later. Skyscraper. Yep.
Anyway, I think this show is like it matched my resonant frequency perfectly.
Yeah.
Like this show hit me in such a way that like it made me so happy I could not sleep.
Wow.
Yeah. It was like I loved it.
I'm so glad you're enjoying it.
I know, and you recommended it to me. So
not sponsored, by the way.
not sponsored at all. No, just very much enjoyed it. So it's become this like mission in my life to like tell everybody about it. But so on this past weekend trip down to the Outer Banks, I was talking to Mike, who is, I guess, member of the GMA, future brother-in-law. And I had suggested heavily to him to watch it.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, we watched it. Or like the first episode or something. And I was like, yeah, what'd you think? And he's like, "I it wasn't what I was expecting." And I was like, oh no, you didn't like it. Oh man.
Oh no. Did he not like it?
Well, I think that maybe it just didn't strike the same chord.
He's just not in this. Yeah, it wasn't, didn't match his resonant frequency.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is the fun. I think that's so interesting about it. So it's almost what excites me about the show even further is that like, this is almost something that I can like no matter what. Like
right.
I can know in my bones that like I felt it so like truly
mm-hmm.
that it's like people could be like, dude, it's a terrible show. Like it is so poorly written. Like it would not matter.
Would
to
not
me.
Matter.
Like it's because
in your book, it's a 10 out of 10.
It's a 10 out of 10 because regardless of what it is, it like it meant something to me.
Right.
And I felt like that was such a powerful feeling.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
I can't wait for season 2. It's been renewed, so it's coming back.
Thank goodness.
There's more Ted Lasso on the way.
See, that means it was at least I wasn't completely wrong.
Yeah.
It was good enough that we got season 2.
Someone wanted season 2.
There you go. Right. There you go.
That's amazing. That's great.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you got up next for us?
Well, okay. So I had this somewhat what felt like embarrassing realization about myself yesterday morning when I started to try to put a bunch of pieces together. And it has to do with, we've talked before on the pop about how neither of us have ever felt like music or a band or like a genre has really like defined like who we were or became like part of your identity or something.
Right. It is something I think you and I have both always struggled with where it's never, I don't think either of us like if just by knowing us, just by like basic proximity or whatever, you'd be like, oh yeah, like they love blank.
Yeah, X, you know? Music
exactly.
Or whatever.
Yeah, not even a genre. I can't even claim that.
I would say maybe there was a period in high school where we were really into country music as it was sort of emerging in its like the early stages of what is probably more considered like pop country.
I would say pop country is basically when we hopped on board. Yeah, it seemed like maybe around, I think I was in ninth grade when that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it was around when I got a car and I was all of a sudden like I needed, like I had access, I had long periods of time with access to a radio by myself. And I was like, I got to figure out what I'm going to listen to in here.
Right.
You know? So that was sort of, and it was like, yeah, okay. Yeah. I found the country music station and that was good. So that I did enjoy that where I like, I felt like I was really getting into like a genre of music in a way that I never had before at the age of, you know, 16.
Right.
Which seems later than most people. However, let me give you the setup here. Just so that's the foundation for this, that like never really been like super into music in a way that, yeah, like where I would identify it as part of my identity or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So this yesterday morning, I'm watching Good Mythical Morning.
Okay.
With Rhett and Link.
Yep.
Great show. Love
heard
those guys.
Yeah.
And it's on, I think their little after show called Good Mythical More. And they're talking about this music video that Mick Jagger did with David Bowie or something.
Okay.
And I was like laughing, joking with my wife, Beth, that Like, man, honestly, you can show me a picture. Like, I was joking, like, honestly, those two names for a long time have pretty much been interchangeable in my mind. Like, I couldn't tell you who was the lead singer of what music they sang. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to look it up because I feel like I know what David Bowie looks like. But I don't think if you showed me a picture of Mick Jagger, I couldn't even identify him.
Okay.
You know, so I was like, let me look him up. And so I type in Mick Jagger, and to my like utter embarrassment, the Google comes back and says, did you mean Mick, M-I-C-K, space Jagger? Because what I had typed in was M-C-J-A-G-G-E-R, Mick Jagger.
No way, like McDonald's.
Like, yeah, like McDonald's or something. I was like, oh my gosh. I never realized Mick Jagger was, like, Mick was his first name. Beth just started cracking up. Like, this... Like, how could you not know that? And I was like, yeah, how could I not know that? Like, this, because he's such a famous person in the world of rock and roll.
Oh, yeah, absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
And it, you know, I started thinking back, I was like, I don't think I've ever seen his name written down, like, ever.
Like, do you think you possibly have, but, like, didn't even connect the dots that what it was saying was... like Mick Jagger, because you saw like two words on a page and it was just something you didn't know, and therefore
that,
like, it didn't register
possible
in any way.
That that I've seen it like that, or that I assumed the person writing it was wrong,
okay,
or something. But it never occurred to me that his first name was Mick. You know, this was mind blowing to me in the moment, and I actually tweeted about it, and I was like, today I learned, you know, that it's Mick Jagger, not Mick Jagger. And people were like, what did you think his first name was? And my response to that was, I didn't think this was his last name either. This was just it's like a stage name.
Yeah, in my mind. Right.
I was like, I didn't think it was like Steve Mick Jagger or something, or, you know, I didn't think this was his last name or his first name, or if it was his last name, that's just solely what he went by.
Sure.
You know, like, his first name's irrelevant because he's such a rock star. And so, yeah, I was like, what an irrelevant question. You're missing the point altogether. But I started thinking about it, and like, at this point in my life, I know a lot, I can assign a lot more lead singers to their bands and stuff. But for most of my life, I remember there has been this like cloud in my head of just 80s rock band names, people, maybe not even 80s rock, just like famous music names that have floated around in my head as very interchangeable, because like all of their music is so classic that of course you know all the songs in the present,
right?
But we weren't even alive when they were coming out, so like their music has stood the test of time, but I don't know who these people are because I've never been really into music, and it wasn't like even music that I should have been aware of, you know, as it was coming out in my youth.
Which always does, I think, like, so for example, like to take a step back on that, like I feel like we could probably mark the difference between like a Backstreet Boys song and an NSYNC song, despite the fact that they're both like boy bands from the 90s that like to someone who doesn't listen to either of them would probably argue that they sound exactly the same.
Right. Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, totally different in my mind.
Right. Yeah. But it would be possible in my mind for Luke, your son,
yeah,
growing up in you know, in through his generation of folk to not know the difference between those two people.
Yeah.
Like these were like back in the 90s, these were both like pop stars, I guess.
Yeah.
Like it would not surprise me if they were entangled.
Yeah.
So maybe to your credit, there's a reasonable amount of like, you didn't grow up with them. They were not like as prominent necessarily with the music that we listened to as we were coming up. But that being said, we mostly listened to the radio.
Right. So I thought that as well. Like, is this just a generational thing? And you're right. Possibly it is. But also the problem is that all their music has already stood the test of time. You know, it seems to me that 20 years from now, they're still going to be playing all these 80s rock songs at football games and, you know, sports events. Like, you're still going to know all these songs. And maybe 20 years in the future, yeah, they'll still play like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and, you know, those kind of things that that was on the radio when we were there. But we don't know that yet.
Right.
We don't know if it stood the test of time yet. But these people will be classic forever because they were just there when this stuff was coming out. They were the ones making it.
Right.
But so, man, like, I'll roll down some of these, and I'm curious to know if other people had similar mix-ups or whatever. But so, for example, I already said Mick Jagger and David Bowie, but like, you could have thrown Steven Tyler, Freddie Mercury, all these names. These are like names you hear. All may as well have been the same person. You know, in my mind, I'm like, I don't know who sings what, who's the lead singer of what. Rolling Stones, Aerosmith. Like, I know, like, I could have identified Queen songs. I couldn't have told you Freddie Mercury was associated with Queen.
Right. No, I know. I have the similar, a similar like issue with this where like,
yeah,
Bon Jovi and Sonny Bono. Those are different people, right?
Okay, Ben, I'm glad you brought up Bon Jovi, because you've got, first of all, I didn't even list Sonny Bono in here though, but you've got Bono, Bon Jovi, John Bon Jovi, and John Bonham as well.
Who is the lead singer of?
John Bonham is the lead singer of Led Zeppelin, who, okay, I will also say, Led Zeppelin growing up, couldn't have told you if that was the name of the band or the name of the person.
Okay. Old Led over there. Yeah.
Bon Jovi and John Bon Jovi, same person. One is the lead singer of the band.
Okay.
Bono, lead singer of U2. Don't know who Sonny Bono is.
Is Sonny Bono not Bono? Like, the Bono?
No, the Bono is, like, that's not his name. That is his stage name.
Hold on, I'm looking. Here,
okay, up. Go for it.
Sonny Bono.
Look it up. But, like, they're all such similar sounding names that growing up, to me, it was like, oh, people say Bon Jovi, that must be short for John Bonham or something. Like, because they sound so same, because they sound so similar. They both have that J and B. And not only that, but like, Bon Jovi doesn't sound like a name at all. Sounds like those are not words that mean, and I guess because his first name is John, but there's that as well. But then, yeah, it just sounds like they were all the same.
Right. No, I completely agree with you. I mean, this is something that I struggled with forever. And like, I think even coming up through the years, I always had like a certain cynicism towards like those people in my grade in high school who were like such mega fans of like classic 80s rock.
Yeah.
Where they were like, now that's, they're like, this is real music.
You know? You're going to hear that forever.
You're going to hear it forever. Yeah. But like, it always meant, like, the thing I always wondered about was like, you didn't, like, in my mind, I'm like, you know, we, at best, you were born in the last few months that of the 80s, which is the case for me. I was born in October of 1989. So technically lived in the 80s, but I was an infant.
But not really. Yeah.
But not really, exactly. Like, I grew up with 90s music. Like, that was like what was prominent when I was a kid. And so like, whenever these people were like, oh, this is real music, I'm like, literally, even in high school, I'm like, because people you look up to have told you that that is the case.
Right.
Like, this is not you coming to your own conclusions or whatever. It's like, you didn't grow up with that music. It's just, it's like the music that came before you. It is like not what is popular by today's standards, and therefore it has this like mark of difference that is like glowy enough for you to like latch onto it and like embrace it and everything. And so even then in high school, I was like, I guarantee that at some point in time, again, we could talk about Luke's generation of people, where you might have them looking back on 90s music or early 2000s music and being like, this is real pop. Like, you think you're listening to good pop? This was real pop.
Right.
You know, like, because that's what the 90s had, was, I think, you know, was,
sure,
was good pop music.
Right.
That has consistently been iconic, that has stood the test of time, where
so far, know, yep.
Yeah. So no, it is fascinating. It's such a thing. The way people treat music.
Yeah.
Right. And then actually we were playing a game over the weekend. This was like a random on the road thing where we were talking about like like the net worth of famous people. And so we kept like selecting a category where it would be like musicians, and it would be like, okay, so you have to think of a musician who you think has the highest net worth.
Oh, interesting.
It was very fascinating. Oh. And so like, you know, we're going through and like, you know, I think we did actors first, and I was like, Dwayne Johnson, you know, he's like in everything.
Right.
And so, you know, like comparing like Dwayne Johnson, who's like super prominent and exploding right now, to like Brad Pitt, who's like a household name. Like,
yeah, forever.
Forever. Yeah. Yeah. Like, people just know who he is. And like, I think when we got to musicians, Mike's contribution to it was the band U2.
Yeah.
Or Bono.
Bono. Right.
Right. Yeah. Who is like a billionaire. You right. know, he's like one of the most successful musicians of all time because he is like so famous on like this worldwide scale.
Yeah.
But like the only thing that I really know about the band U2 is that back in like 2010, they released an entire album for free on iTunes and therefore
forced everyone to download it.
And it forced everybody to download it. And so to this day, it's still on my like right. my music on my phone and I still hear this song and it's like, it's always driven me crazy because I don't have entire albums of anything
right.
other than like this one random YouTube album that was free. Yeah. So I don't know. So I ended up hearing it way, way too often. So I always have like a frustration with it, but I thought that was interesting that they're like that the band U2 is like just one of the most like wealthy and successful bands of all time.
It's so funny you bring YouTube. When I had my old job, I had a concert venue, by the way. Predictably, like one of my bosses, huge U2 fan. And this must have made me seem like so inferior. I was like, who? Like they were like, you know, like Bono. I was like, what? You know, like this is in 2010.
Right.
And like working at a concert venue, and I'm like, couldn't tell you one of their songs.
Right.
You know, it was like, which must have seemed really stupid. But
it is probably the type of thing where somehow you have missed out. And we've talked about it before on the pop, but like this idea of general knowledge.
Yeah. But this is exactly what I mean. Like when I tell people like, oh, I'm not really like, I'm not into music or like, it's hard to communicate how like people, I think they think you're like, oh, okay, you just don't like listen to a lot of music, but like no one's not, you know, certainly, you know, like, no, you really don't understand. Like, and you know, and the people listening, like if you watch Super Carlin Brothers, my brain will retain information about like details like this, like crazy.
Oh, absolutely. And that, to your credit, like this is, it's interesting because it's such a good point you bring up even. Like, I mean, I feel like very frequently we could talk about like an obscure show from Nickelodeon from when we were like 7 years old. And you would remember like the next door neighbor's name or something like mm-hmm. that. And it was, to me, it's always just been this like, how do you remember
right.
that? And so I think that, to your credit, it's very clearly just been something that like has never been so impressionable
right.
like or impressed upon us that this is something we would have retained, because I think of anybody you would have been put before you.
So, that there you go, people. That is my.
So maybe that's what you tell people though. Like when people look at you and they're like, "How do you store all this information?" You should just start responding, because I don't know anything about music,
right? Like
at all. Like
everything. Yeah.
you want to know how I can tell you who Mr. Dink is? Because I don't know who Bon Jovi is.
Hey, Mr. Dink.
Mr. Dink.
Yeah. Way to go! Way to go!
Thanks.
That's Doug Funny's neighbor.
Yes.
And I believe the origin of the phrase dinks as dual income, no kids. If you hear that phrase, because the dinks were Doug Funny's next door neighbors. They had no kids and they were extremely it seemed like they were pretty wealthy, because in every episode, Mr. Dink would have a new very expensive invention.
Yeah. Hello there, Douglas. Yeah. Very expensive.
Yeah. So I think that's where the phrase the dual income, no kids comes from.
That is so funny. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, what a good origin story. If not, it's a very fitting coincidence.
Or else they named the Dinks after that this idea, existing phrase.
Going that far.
I like to believe Doug had something to do with it.
Samesies.
That's more fun. That's more
Samesies.
Fun.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
I love that idea. Well, that's, I don't know. Super, super interesting is delving into. I don't know. To me, it is kind of fun to find these categories of something that you know just absolutely nothing about.
Oh, I know. This is like one of the fun things about discovering new realms of the internet. You're like, oh, I didn't even know this existed. The thing to me that feels so embarrassing about music is that music is not a small thing.
No.
It is a giant, massive thing.
It is.
And
okay, so let's talk about this for a second, because this is something that, like, talking about those people in high school who would talk about like real musicians, you know, like a lot of times I felt like they would talk about like, oh my God, best guitarist of all time, you know, and like you would be like, have you ever heard their live 1987 album where like so and so goes on a 27-minute solo and it's like. You know, and it's like, and I'm like,
well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
was like your guitar was here.
I soloed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, it's this thing where in my mind, I'm like, but there's no lyrics during that part. Like they're not singing.
Oh,
like, you know, and I'm like, can you be, are you like are you captivated by just this like weird collection of guitar strums.
Right, that, like, they just like, understand music. So it's they, like, appreciate music in a way you can't even understand.
Right. It's like they feel it, you know? Like, yeah. And it's like it radiates through them, just like maybe it's, like, their resonant frequency.
Maybe.
It just, like, it hits them and it makes them, like, have, like, a, like, emotions and stuff.
Maybe.
But that's the funny thing about me, too, though, is that I tend to like the lyrics of song, or not even like the lyrics, but I like the singing portion of songs.
This right.
Is like the fact that I'm calling it the singing portion.
Yeah.
I'm sure people at home are like scratching their eyeballs out. Like, no terms better, Ben. Sorry. I don't know them.
Oh my gosh.
But the other thing is I've never known the words to songs ever. Like, there are very few songs that I have ever known the words to the whole thing. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But that means that very frequently I was listening to music in my childhood that had like messages that were like the whole purpose of the song is about something. And it was like, I never even knew what it was.
Right.
So
these are just the words that are accompanying the music that I'm enjoying in my brain.
Right. Like, it sounds catchy to me. Like, and that's what it comes down to. And it's like, if I were to actually take the time to figure out what the song is about, it could be the case that I was like belting it to a song that was like promoting an idea that I profoundly disagreed with or something. Like, it's like, I have no idea what I'm even saying. Like, I'm just singing to the song that sounds cool.
Oh, whenever I see like in a documentary or something about a band of the past where they're talking about how this band believed in all these things and people would listen to their music and it would get everyone riled up, and I'd be like, what? I've never listened to music for the messaging. Like, people were buying albums for the band's messaging about this political topic. To the point where I'm watching the show, I'm like, I'm not sure I believe you. Maybe that was the intended messaging, but I can't imagine people were listening to it and getting the messaging and getting riled up. That seems preposterous to me.
But then literally look at what we do now, like for a living, which is basically like, you know, so aggressively digging into the medium that I think resonates with us the best, which is, you know, like movies, television, and like, you know, especially anything under that category where there's some amount of like continuity or like we understand like the underlying motives and intentions of what a studio was attempting to do with a story.
Right.
And, you know, so now I feel like we look into things and we can watch the movie Coco from Pixar, and there's like a moment where like Miguel is like strumming the ironically it's a music thing, but you know, he's like strumming the guitar, but like his fingers from an animation standpoint like are actually playing the song,
right?
Like, he is strumming the correct notes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the type of thing that any animator could have just like not done that, and 99.5% of the audience would never know that it wasn't correct. But it's kind of like one of those things that's like a detail that you can appreciate where it's like, whoa, like they did that. You know, it's, do you have any idea how hard it is to move 10 different like elements of a animated rig in a way that like is doing something with then an extra layer of intention?
Yeah.
It's like that moment from Star Trek where he's talking about like time warp spacing or something. He's like,
right, we're trying to,
that's
like
trying to hit a bullet with another bullet while riding a horse.
Yeah, backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it's impossible.
Yeah. Can't be done. And it's like, well, do it. And they do.
Right. But so anyway, Ethan, the editor who edits our podcast for us, he's actually messaged me about whenever we talk about music, he always texts me while he's listening and editing the episode to let me know all the things that we are just so unaware of.
You're
going to
get so many texts this time, I'm sure.
So many texts.
Yeah.
But he has talked to me, I think, before about like, you have to listen to the whole album because like the whole, each song is like a bigger piece of the album's voice.
Right.
You know, it's like each one is like building up to something. And,
This is like a product. I don't think it's our fault as much then, because so much of the way we consumed media was via the radio, and the industry will promote like hits. It's not like the radio is like, okay, we're going to play Taylor Swift's entire new album.
Right.
You know,
that's true. But it actually would be kind of interesting if they did that, or if they had, you know, then like Taylor Swift on in between each song to sort of like guide you through.
That'd be interesting.
I would actually totally tune into that.
There you go.
Also, that being said, this is like one of those funny things about me, but people are like, if they were to force me to answer the question, like, who's your favorite musician or artist or whatever band?
Yeah.
I feel like it's like if I were to really assess it, it's like the answer might be Taylor Swift.
Might be T Swift. Yeah.
It's like not even intentionally, and I've actually never even like purchased one of the albums before, but it's one of these things where very infrequently do I hear a Taylor Swift song that I don't like.
Right.
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like, well, when it really comes down to it, I mean, she produces the most amount of music that I like the most consistently. So if you were to force me to answer this question, that's probably my answer.
There you go. There's your answer. You got it. Let me tell you what, because you were talking about how you don't know the lyrics. I thought I was, as I was going through my embarrassing lack of knowledge about all things rock and roll the other day, I remembered this feeling as a kid, because at some point when you're a kid, you'll be talking with your buddies and be like, oh yeah, we're gonna have a band when we grow up or whatever, right? Like, I'm sure you had that conversation.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Two kazoos and a drum.
Oh, great. Great band.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember, I think even as a kid, the fame of the lead singer of the band really baffled me, because to me, the lead singer was like the least impressive part. Like, as a kid.
Yeah.
Like, why would anyone, like, who cares about, like, the easiest part of being in a band? Like, because I was like, oh yeah, I definitely want to be the drummer. That's definitely the coolest part. But like, as an adult, seems drummer most replaceable, it would seem like. Like, it didn't occur to me that the lead singer would be also the face or the voice or the real talent, or not that obviously everyone in the band or whatever band is very talented.
Super talented, yeah.
But yeah, it occurred to me that people playing the instruments as a kid seemed like way the more important, impressive thing than the person singing the song. Like, what, anyone could get up there and do that.
Like, you could remember the words to a 3.5-minute song.
Anyone could just remember the words and go up there and do it, you know?
Right. No, well, and it's funny too, because I think the other thing to tack onto that, as we continue to pull this strand aggressively, I mean, there's gonna be no sweater left by the time we're done with it. We watched a movie growing up that I think is popular. It has Tom Hanks in it. That Thing You Do. And it's the movie. It is a movie about a band that I think is like a probably slight product inspired by like the Beatles.
I think the band is supposed to like lightly pair or mirror the Beatles.
The Beatles, okay.
In some way.
So, but the whole thing with that is, you know, you are following the story kind of from the drummer's perspective. Like, I would argue he is the main character of it.
Yeah, Guy,
yeah. And he and through that, though, you sort of like watch the lead singer like start to get some notoriety, mm-hmm. and become like sort of famous on his own. And like then, you know, whatever, like that's like he gets like a really big head for being like the head
right.
of it or whatever.
They replace the bass player with Wolfman. Right.
See, details that only you can remember. Let me tell you about music.
Yeah. But is it a movie?
Right.
Let me tell you, I have never liked the movie That Thing You Do.
What?
I know. I can tell you that for a long time, as a kid, my core reason had nothing to do with the movie itself, but this movie came out, I think, at least for rental, the same week as the James Bond movie GoldenEye.
Okay.
Right? You know, which I think was the first Pierce Brosnan James Bond movie.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, that's accurate.
And there was the accompanying super famous N64 game, GoldenEye.
That we played.
That we went along with it a lot. But anyway, we're at the video store, and, you know, as kids, we were like, oh, I'm the James Bond, those so cool, spy guy, big hero, whatever. And new movie, I was like, oh, man, Dad, because we'd gotten, like, James Bond movies before. Can we get this? And he's like, nope. My coworker said we should get this one, and it was That Thing You Do. And I was, like, so disappointed that we didn't get to watch it. It didn't seem like that big of a deal in the moment. Then went home, and the next day I walk into school, and both of my two best friends, who were not, had rented the movie literally the night before and watched it, and it was just this like devastating like left outedness of it, and I just blamed That Thing You Do so hard, and it just like scorched it forever in my brain. And then I will say, when I grew up, I saw GoldenEye eventually. Great.
You got there?
Yeah. I got there and I rewatched That Thing You Do. I was like, you know what? I really had this negative association with That Thing You Do because of GoldenEye for a very long time. But honestly, whatever. Let me just give this movie another chance. Everyone seems to like it. I'll give it another chance. And I watched it. I still didn't like it.
You're kidding.
I was just like, not for me. Super catchy song.
That's the
for
thing.
For sure.
I think even as a kid, the thing that was mind-blowing to me is that they were able to write a song for a movie. Like, so in my mind, the song that they wrote for the movie, even as a kid, is like a prop. You know, it's like, yeah, like they were like, well, we need a catchy song that this band sings that like catches on. Like everybody wants to hear, you know, that song, which is That Thing You Do.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do they do it? Like, there are so many people out there that would love to write a catchy song and be famous and be on the radio and like all of the things, you know, like have a concert tour and a record label. And I'm like, and they just wrote one for this movie?
There's no problem.
Like, how does this happen? And I think that as an adult, it has occurred to me that writing a catchy song is different from like writing like a good song.
Okay.
But like catchy songs are still good.
Boy, this sounds like something for someone who's really good at music theory to answer.
Yeah, I need to know. Why are catchy songs not more popular if they're so catchy? Or is it, or was That Thing You Do just like this weird, like unicorn song?
Well, presumably they had a very experienced composer or songwriter create the song.
Okay, now I'm going to take it one step further. I'm going to keep pulling on bye-bye RIP sweater. Okay, so this is the other thing that has baffled me about... So let's go back to the lead singer idea. So American Idol, right? The whole show. You've heard of it.
I know about American Idol.
No doubt.
Yeah, Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood.
Yeah, a couple of the people went on to be famous.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what is mind-blowing to me about the show American Idol is that there are like mega-talented people out there in the world who are capable of singing that like are in some way, I don't know, lacking the it factor necessary for record labels to like pick them up and go.
Mm-hmm.
Like whenever I was watching American Idol, I was almost like, you're the entire country watching right now. Who cares if you win? Someone from a record label just watched you.
Right.
Like, you will be, like, do not worry. You will be discovered. And so, I think that is true. Like, there are some, like, people who have participated in these big time shows that did not win that then went on to be famous.
Like, Clay Aiken and Jennifer Hudson? Right?
I think that's correct. Are just two good examples of people that like went on to be famous. But in my, it was always to me like, how could there be like, there's so many people out there that can just straight belt it. Like, you know, how it's like one of these things where I can't tell if it's like, this is the measure of how unqualified I am to assess music that in my mind, it's like, there are tons of people who can sing. Like, what makes any one person stand out versus any other person? Like, why does, if you can sing a really great song, like, then do it.
Yeah, like, you gotta have all those pieces come together.
You gotta
have all the industry has to select you.
I know. It seems like.
But you're right. It's so, because American Idol, especially when it first came out, was the most popular show on TV.
Right.
You know? And so, sure, after season one, Kelly Clarkson indeed went on to be very famous. But I think as soon as season two, the winner largely fell into obscurity pretty quickly.
Right. Well, and I think that that was Ruben. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think, Ruben stuttered?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that he went on to have some level of like, you know, like niche.
Yeah. I think he's still popular in like R&B crowds or something, but he's not Carrie Underwood.
No, you're right. Yeah. And I guess that's like what it comes down to is after enough seasons, there are the people whose names stand out and the people whose names don't. And probably if you were to investigate on some level, there are people who are doing fine in their respective area, but they didn't go on to be like a household name.
Yeah. I guess that's what I mean. It's like, how could the whole nation have voted for you on the most popular show and then you not have turned into an instant, you know, like you've got the most, like you have such potential. You have exactly the position anyone could dream of for having to launch their career. And yet, and you know, they can sing and they went through this whole competition and America already likes you.
Right.
So where do they go? What happens?
I don't know.
I don't know.
This is almost like where it's like there, maybe there's just like a limited amount in like the mass, the psyche of the masses ability to take in, but only so many household names.
I don't know. Because on the other hand, I think when we started listening to country music, like in high school, I could have pretty quickly identified whoever the artist was who came on the radio. Because there was like maybe 10 super well-known people, probably more than that. But I could have told you the difference between like Toby Keith or Trace Adkins or Brad Paisley or Jason Aldean or whoever.
Okay.
And like easy, no problem. Whereas today, there is like a flood. There's like a a flood of just new country artists. And to me, they all still just sound like the same people. And I'd be like, oh, is this that person? And I'd be like, oh, nope, it's this new guy I've never heard of. And be like, oh, okay. And I can't tell them apart at all anymore.
Interesting.
But there's so many new names. It'll be, it's not even like, oh, I've heard of him before. It's yet another new one.
Okay, but no, maybe we just landed on something here, though. Because you, at the very least, you were able to recognize a period of time where you were able to name a variety of the main artists who were performing and able to, like, they're like discern amongst them. It's like, oh, this is a Toby Keith song. This is Alan Jackson song.
Yeah.
Like you were able to like parse through that. But I would be willing to bet that if we were to poll the kernel audience out there about like country music, I bet that they would argue that it all sounds the same.
Well, probably,
you know, it's like Dog Ran Away. One of the classic, country song things. It's always like,
oh yeah, we're partying on a boat. We're there's a single road.
My tractor is attractive.
Yeah. Very specifically, Kenny Chesney. Oh, man.
Well, yeah, so there we go. Yeah, we know little about music.
Well, yeah, we've talked about it for 40 minutes, I think, thereabouts.
Look at us go.
Look at us. Everyone's just like, unsub. All respect lost.
All respect lost.
Nothing.
Actually, speaking of, we can transition into something I teed up very early on.
Okay.
So, reviews.
Oh,
so
right.
We talked about this, I think, in like maybe like the first 38 seconds, and then we you know, paused for 55 minutes.
Well, we talked about coyotes for a minute, too.
We did. Good point. Good point. We had to cover coyotes. Yeah. Very important.
Very important.
Very important. Okay. So first off, if you haven't left a review for Popcorn Culture, I mean, do it. you can put plenty of emphasis on how much we talk about how little we understand music.
Right.
It's like if you're looking for a podcast about people who understand music less than you do, this is your podcast.
This is that podcast.
Right.
Yes. If you want people talking about music, about how much they don't know about music, you have found the one.
The only.
Also, coyote facts.
In maybe every episode, starting with episode 44.
You'll get there.
This is, okay, I actually have this problem in life constantly that where it'll be like something where I like want it to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's almost like, I'll feel so excited about it like the day that I start it. And then it's like 2 weeks later, I'll be like, oh, that was such an old idea. It feels overwrought.
It's gone.
I've used it too much. I'm over that idea.
Whoops.
Onto the new one. So it's like, we can call it like the coyote effect is whether or not, and the coyote effect, pending how many episodes we get a fun coyote fact.
Ben, I think coyotes have caught fire.
You think they have?
I think so.
So you think, I'm just asking. You think Three Coyote Moon t-shirt works?
I mean, it very well could.
We need it?
We need, I'm certainly okay with coyote merch.
Am I one of the coyotes?
Maybe you're all three, or maybe you're none.
Or maybe I'm in the moon.
Maybe you're the moon.
Because coyotes keep finding me like they find the moon.
Right. Three Coyote Ben.
Three Coyote Ben. Yes. Okay. Anyway, so reviews. This has become a strange thing for me where like for the longest period of time, I was pretty much that person who would like leave a review if I was absolutely just head over heels enamored with a product, and it was kind of like, oh my gosh, this was so good, like I want to tell someone, anyone,
right,
that like I had a positive
experience.
I've
got the sparkle eyes. I need to tell people about Ted Lasso.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Five stars. I would give it 6 stars.
Wow.
If given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just not, I don't know. That was basically it. Or if I was prompted, like if I had purchased something from a website and they followed up and it happened to be the case that I was sitting at my computer with nothing else to do. And they were like, how did you like your new sleeping bag?
Boy, nothing makes me want to review something less than the prompted. Popped up. Oh, I'm going to hard right turn real quick.
Do it.
So Man, okay, this is my least favorite app to prompt me with the review pop-up, and it does it all the time, is the Bible app I have.
Really?
Yes.
So it'll say, like, could you please review this app?
Yes, yes. But the name of the app is, like, Holy Bible or something.
Okay.
Right? So
original.
Oh, but it's so, I feel like it's extremely manipulative.
Okay.
In the way that it works, because it'll pop up and it'll be like, would you like to rate Holy Bible? And you're like, well, I don't feel like I can safely checks the sky. Give was it that, anything.
Was that thunder?
Was that
thunder? Yeah.
Can I? And it's like, you are like, because it sounds like what they're asking you to do is leave a rating on the Bible, not on the app. Give it a one every time because I'm like, you are trying to manipulate. I don't like this function of the app. What I don't like about the app is that it's popping up asking for a rating in this manipulative way. And
I do tend to find that apps that have like overwhelmingly positive reviews, it does seem like those are also frequently the apps that's like, using our app, please leave a rating now.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, yeah, 5 stars, whatever. And like, then you're like, oh, that's how it happens.
That's how it happened. That pop-up is so important.
So what I've learned though with my reviews is that pictures and giving very specific details of like my interaction are typically like the things that like really actually make for a useful review for other people.
Yeah.
And this is something that like I love reviews. So like if I'm online shopping, especially, you're always running into that issue of like, you can't touch the product. You don't know what it's like.
Yeah.
So if there are good reviews where it's like, oh man, it's got like a good weight about it, you know, or like it's made with good materials or it feels sturdy or something, like those are all the terms that I'm like, oh, this is yes. Add to cart. Thank you. And so I've started to realize that. And so I've started to try to like leave more information when I make purchases. And it is still the case that I feel like, and we've talked about this before, that it's usually good experiences are bad experiences, you know, so like you very rarely are going to leave like a 3-star review because it's
right.
It didn't really like leave you with enough positivity or negativity one way or another.
Yeah.
So I would say that still remains true for me. But I had one situation earlier this year where I left a 1-star review. And I was so absurdly frustrated with the company because I was getting like this total runaround with it. And it was like script writing mode. I like sat down and was like, I'm going to very carefully outline in detail a review that, and this is the key here, that is not emotional. It is fact driven.
Right.
And so it's like, it's not like, oh, they made me so angry, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's like, that's not useful to anybody. That, because nobody's going to be able to determine whether or not their own personal tolerance for poor customer service or something would match the person who's being emotional.
Right.
Like, and so what you need is to put yourself into like a very controlled version of, this is what happened. This is my outline. I left a 1-star review and it's like, it's not because I was like emotional about it, but rather because I'm of all these things.
Because product was bad. Right.
And I'm going to outline it all.
Yeah.
And so I left one of these earlier this year and it was surprising for me. I would say I have left less than 5 1-star reviews in my entire life.
I left 2 yesterday.
Holy mother of mutton.
We'll come back to that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a whole bunch of 1-star reviews in one day.
Well, it's an interesting story, but I'll let you finish yours.
Okay. Anyway, the company, like the VP of the company called me within 30 minutes of posting this review. And I was like, man, that is, I don't know. It's always been something where I was like, I feel like I did a reasonably good job here because the reaction was what it was. Mm-hmm. It was almost like, and then they met me like with almost like, hey, we saw your review. We want to work through this. And I have to tell you that they did, that they followed up in a way that was like positive, but they still ended up dropping the ball after that.
Wow.
So ultimately completed my transaction, did go through with it in the end, but they prompted me several times afterwards where they were like, would you like to update your review based on your final purchase?
Oh,
and it was like, no.
It's like they had to tackle this because you did such a good review that other people are going to read it and not buy the product.
Precisely. Yeah. And it was such a big product. It was such a big expense to incur on this particular thing that like the thought occurs to me, it's like, if that was well written enough, like that's, it has impact. You made your voice heard.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not like trying to like drag down the company or anything like that, but you know, there, it's like, at the very least, what my hope would be that it would allow for some change.
It occurs to me that it doesn't even have to be a big item, though, because we once upon a time bought these, I think it was like bamboo cups for Luke. They were, you know, cups that were like made out of like recycled bamboo or something.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, yeah, these are cool. They look nice, but they were terrible. Like they didn't survive through the washing machine, which it said it could. They cracked, they broke, and we had them for maybe 2 weeks, and the entire order was just gone through like normal use, you know?
Okay.
And you might be like, well, yeah, if you're throwing cups around, it's like, yeah, but for a toddler cup, of course they're going to be thrown around, you know, right, they're like, prone to breaking.
Yeah, needs durability.
And it wasn't even being broken during thrown around stuff. It was like going down in the dishwasher, you know, like top rack, you know, not even, whew. Oh. You know, we were doing what they said was okay.
Wow, could you guys go?
Yeah.
I've never followed that guideline once in my entire life. I have no idea what's supposed to go top rack and what's bottom rack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Largely, I'm like, I don't think this matters, and it's faster than hand washing it. So go.
I put the silverware in the little slots.
The silverware in the slots, and I hand wash our nice like butcher block knives. But otherwise,
actually, that one did that rank true.
Although it always makes me nervous because I'm like, these are so sharp, I'm going to cut my hand, and then I'm going to be like, why didn't I just put it in there? But anyway, not the point. But so I think we left a 1-star review on these cups.
Okay.
And their solution was to send us like, oh, so sorry you had a bad experience. Here's more stuff. So they sent us replacement cups and some like plates, which predictably also broke.
Right.
Like, you are not fixing the problem.
Right.
Like, so you just gave me clutter.
Right. Which I know you hate.
I do not like clutter, Ben. So anyway, though, that was a much cheaper product than it sounds like whatever you were working on dealing with.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, yesterday I left 2 1-star reviews.
Okay. Lay it on me.
And I don't really leave reviews very often, but I was downtown and we have those Lime scooters.
Yeah.
You know, that you can just like pick up, which at the, that you can just, you know, pick up, scan it, ride it. Super easy. And last year they arrived in the city and I was so excited. We use them all the time and they're so convenient. You could just, oh, here's one. Boom. Oh, other side.
It's amazing.
Saved me a 7-minute walk.
Right.
Great. So I find one near where I parked, scan it. Great. And I drive like literally just across the street and I go to stop. Brakes don't work.
No way.
Very bad feature to not have working. So I'm like, well, I contemplate, I'm like, dude, can I stop with my foot? And I'm like, I wasn't even going very fast. And that was kind of hard because they're a little bit heavier. It's like, nope. Okay. I see another one. I'm just going to ride it over to that one. Switch scooters or whatever.
Okay.
So, but it, you know, it asked me like, how was your experience? And I was like, well, the brakes didn't work. So really bad.
Right.
You know, I could only drive it like 10 feet, but I left a 1-star review and it says, what was the matter? And I said, brakes. And then I got another pop-up and was like, sorry, you had a bad experience. We're refunding your ride. I was like, oh, that's great. Cool. Because I was going to feel so cheated that, you know, it would have been like $1 or something. But
no, I understand. But yeah, still.
Yeah. So anyway, then I get on the next scooter that I just parked next to and I scan it in, starts the ride. Here it gives me the little start chime and I push off with a scoot, push the throttle. Nothing.
No go. No power.
No power.
Man.
So I was like, this is so annoying. So I only got that one. I wasn't even on that one long enough for it to register a ride because I didn't go anywhere.
Okay.
But I left yet another 1-star review and it was like, you're not being charged because you didn't go very far. I was like, okay. I'm 2 for 2 on not being charged on bad experiences. At least there's that. But then I wasn't near another scooter.
Oh no.
So I had to walk it after all. And then on the way back, I passed the cluster.
Okay.
A cluster. And I was like, okay. A bushel. All right. Of limes. I cannot whiff 3 times on scooters. So I get on it, I scan it in, and I test it out. It accelerates, it brakes, but I happen to be on like this sort of like brick part of the road.
Yeah.
So I don't notice the actual problem until I get back on the main road, which is that the tire has like a dent in it. So the whole ride is like, which at first I thought was because of the bricks, but it was not because of the bricks. It was because of the tires.
Oh my gosh. So
I was totally over 3 and honestly over 4 because the only other time this year I've tried to use the Lime scooter, it also didn't accelerate. So I'm just not having luck with them later this year. But at least that last one moved, and I was able to ride it uncomfortably to my destination, where I gave it a 2-star review because at least it drove.
At least it drove. And stopped. Okay. Man, okay. That's so funny because, for one, I've always had positive experiences with these things.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love them. I think it's a great, well, other than I guess we have a couple friends who like work in like the medical field
uh-huh.
who have said that they have seen people due to them, which I guess is, I don't know, maybe inevitable.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea. But otherwise, for me, especially like working in downtown Roanoke, which is a very like walkable city, it's not that big.
Yeah.
But still going like five blocks or something can take enough time to where sometimes it's just worth hopping on and rolling.
7-10 minutes to walk.
Right. So I use them a lot. My big thing with the Lime scooters, my quick anecdote about them is that one thing I've noticed recently is that every single time I walk up on a cluster is that they're all knocked over. And I'm always like, they actually have you like park them and then like take a picture when you've done parking it to like verify that you left it somewhere safe and not like in a tree. And so every time I walk up on them and I see them like all knocked over, I'm like, well, this is really odd because like they make you take a picture. So like surely these people are not like parking them and then just like throwing them sideways or
just,
something.
Just sounds like vandalism.
Right. So it was always one of these things where I was like, wow, I really would like, I would so love to like see this happening because I really want to go ask someone like, do you think, is it like the problem that they're like some type of, I don't know, in the same way like that light pollution is a thing, like is this like a sidewalk pollution thing to you or something where you feel like it's like cluttering up like downtown or like what's going on? Like I want to know, I want to get inside your brain.
I want to ask you about the dog poo.
Yes I want to ask you a good throwback to my interaction for the time I was barked at. Ha. You get it?
Nailed it.
For cleaning dog poo, you know, that's the thing. I was cleaning it.
Yeah.
And I still got in trouble anyway. But so the other day I was actually driving down the street and I was passing a cluster in my car and I saw like a group of kids, I don't know, maybe more like high school aged people, kick over a whole row of them. Mm. And I was like, I just witnessed it happening.
That was it.
And I was like, the moment. And literally, I mean, I was like, I was so compelled to turn my car around and go back. And not like, my goal wasn't to like go yell at him or anything. Like, I don't have a stake in Lime scooters or anything like that. And it's not that big of a deal to pick it up. My genuine curiosity is why do it? Like, and so like, I really wanted to get back there and be like, hey, no problem. You can leave him on the ground. But like, why did you do that? Like, what, like, I really want to know what you're thinking about.
It's just rebelliousness.
Just rebelliousness.
That's all it is.
It's like, it's that simple.
It's just like, look what I did. It's the act of getting away with something. It feels like you have circumvented some sort of authority.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you remember in high school when we made GMA paper stickers?
Oh yeah.
So people have asked about this before. You did. Yeah. People have asked about this before. Some people have actually said, what does the GMA stand for? Which I realized that maybe we talk about it so often that people don't know. It's Green Mallard Association.
It's the Green Mallard Association.
It is exactly.
Yeah.
Green Mallard is a duck.
Well, I think just a mallard is a duck and it has a green head.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think you have to specify the greenness of it, but we did.
But we did.
Yeah.
So anyway, Green Mallard Association. What am I, wood duck?
Oh, yeah. We used to have...
Chief Jake, Head Merganser.
We had Chief Merganser, Wood Duck, Head...
I think it was Head Drake.
Head Drake.
Yeah.
Head Drake and the Great Mallard.
And the Great Mallard, which is you.
That was me.
Very, very self-appointed.
Yeah, self-appointed. Who knew?
Who knew? There you go. Actually, we should put that on your person card. The Great Mallard.
That'd be such a throwback. Such a 2006 throwback. Anyway, paper stickers.
So we thought it was very funny in high school, and I think we've told the story before, but to go through and take these paper stickers of a drawing of a green mallard that you had done.
Yeah, I went into Microsoft Paint and basically worked up a really bad logo, which was just like a duck's head in a circle, and it said...
Bad logo? It was a piece of artwork.
Like I said, it was an absolute piece of artwork that I drew in Microsoft Paint. I don't even know if it said the words Green Mallard Association. I think it did.
Yeah, it did. I'm gonna go with it did.
I think it did, but it was just basically a circle with a duck's head in it, and it said Green Mallard Association.
Perfect.
And I printed out like 16 to a sheet of paper, and then just cut them up, and we put scotch tape on the back,
and we just put them places.
And then so we had like hundreds of these things. I had like a little Ziploc bag in my backpack, but yeah. So yeah, what we did was then after school when we were all. Still at the empty school now for cross country practice or track practice or whatever we were doing, was we would just put the stickers like all over the place, just slip random ones in people's lockers at complete random. They had no idea. There'd just be a sticker somewhere, told nobody what it meant. Nobody knew who was doing it, what it was for, what it stood for, what the point was. It was just pure, complete, innocent chaos. I'm sure there's a D&D phrase for this exact.
Oh, there's gotta be. Yeah.
But it was It was, I mean, we had no idea what the effects would be of this. It was just like a funny thing to do. Like, haha, we'll just put these duck stickers up and see what happens. Man, people had no idea what was going on. Like, all of a sudden, there was just this, because it says association, which makes it like some group or something.
Right.
Yeah. Which,
there were four of us.
But man, I saw someone like, they'd put the sticker on their arm. And they were just like wearing it. I was like, you don't even know. And I would like talk to them and they're like, yeah, they're just everywhere. I don't know what it is. And I was like, it's me. You don't know.
Oh my gosh. It's so funny.
You don't know.
Like you're sitting there like, yes.
It was so funny. But I will say it did fill you with this like sense of like some sort of like power. Like you knew.
Yeah.
You can see everyone was confused, but you knew. And like being the cause of it was this like very unusual feeling.
It was. I'm sure psychologically there's got to be something going on. But so, no, my curiosity now, though, is that like it was this game that went on forever and it was like a little like, you know, sense of pride, especially for the ones that we like placed in such unusual or hard to reach spaces that they like they just lasted.
Oh, yeah. You come back like after summer. Still there.
The one on the fire. It wasn't a fire. What is the term for the thing you pull?
Yeah, like a fire alarm.
Fire alarm. That's the one. Yeah. It wasn't a fire alarm. I think it was like a little box that like a light would come on or something. But we had one like, I think it was on top of it even, but it was there forever.
There was one in the cafeteria. There was this like big shield over the entrance to the cafeteria that like, you know, just said Cave Spring Nights or whatever.
Right.
And I think Mike had jumped up and slammed one right in the center of the shield in this very unreachable spot.
Yes.
And that one was there for a very long time.
Love it.
So fun. I mean, but, you know, you just like drop them like confetti. It's just like, oh, they're just in the stairs.
They're just there.
And yeah, you know, it was like you just walk past the place and just sort of throw a sticker up. It was.
But it was not really like harmful to anything.
It wasn't harmful.
Like the mild nuisance of cleaning up, which in any of the places they were would have to be cleaned anyway.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I guess that's like, is this the rush that these like the lime scooter knocker overs?
Yeah.
Is that what they're feeling is like the same sense of,
I think so, but they're doing something a little more wrong at least, because they are potentially damaging something.
True.
You know, ours at the very least was completely innocent with no maliciousness at all. It was just the random chaos of it.
Right. Like it didn't stand for literally anything.
It did not stand for anything other than that it was happening and people didn't know.
Right.
I think, you know what? I think we put some in like random library books that like, I bet somewhere in that library there is still a sticker in the pages of a book that no one will ever pick up. That makes me really happy.
It does. It does. A legacy.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Man. So that was the great GMA sticker. I doubt anyone from the high school will ever understand or remember it.
I know.
It was very fun.
It was very fun. So anyway, if you go to Cave Spring High School and you ever discover one of these, you'll have to let us know, because it was just under construction. So I feel like if there was ever a time when they would be gone for good, it would be now.
Not if it was in a rogue book, man. Those books are going right back on the shelves. That'd be great if it survived renovation.
Ooh. Ooh.
What fun.
Yeah, Luke, right now, would Luke go to Cave Spring High School?
I think he would. Yeah.
Oh, okay. There's hope. Okay. Oh my gosh, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. I feel like it was a good one. We talked about a lot of stuff, our lack of understanding of music, some Coyote fun facts, and the true rebellious nature of the GMA in
chaotic,
high school.
Chaotic neutral, I think, is where we all landed.
Chaotic. Look at us go.
Yeah.
Look at us go. Guys, we are running a special promotion over on our Patreon right now. If you would like to get your very own Jay and Ben, Jazzy J, Buzzy B person card, we're going to be making metal person cards. They will list both of our names on there with a variety of other inside jokes. It is like a, if you can imagine, if you go close your eyes and imagine deeply, a business card, except it's metal.
And it's a person card.
Yes. Yeah, it's got information and stuff on it. How cool!
Yeah.
Anyway, those are available if you sign up for our Patreon between now and October 25th, which happens to be my birthday, at any of the three tiers, all of which are $5. If you are already a patron and you're hearing this, then congratulations, you're already getting one.
Yeah.
So if you guys want to check that out, you can do so by going to patreon.com/popcornculture. They have been very popular, so thank you to anybody who signed up, including these patrons who we need to thank this week, which would be James Stokes, Callum Langford, Diego Espinoza, Lauren, Hey, Lauren. Max Dowd, Jesse Coleman, Simon Bott, Alice, Tanman, 1112, Carrie Ann Strine, Abby Abernathy, great name.
Ooh.
Perfect alliteration.
Really good. Well done, parents of Abby.
Yes. Danielle Kramer, Michael Walsh, Ryan Bischoff, Parker Marriott, Edward Horace, and Elizabeth.
Oh, also a good name.
Yeah. Thank you guys all so much for your support on Patreon. But otherwise, until next week.
Pop, pop.